Good morning and welcome to Storylines on Hunter's Bay Radio, 88.7 FM and online at MuskokaOnline.com. I'm your host, Christine Cowley. Today we're going to do something a little different in honor of two very special people. The first is the beloved Muskoka poet Alan Pearson, who passed away on May 30th, 2012. To mark the fourth anniversary of Alan's death, we will be featuring readings of two of his poems, but the reading itself will be very special indeed because we are rebroadcasting an excerpt of a program originally aired June 6, 2012, just after Alan's death, when Jenny Cressman joined HBR's much-loved radio man, James Carroll, to mark Alan's passing. We also have with us today Doreen Pearson, Alan's steadfast partner, his greatest fan and biographer. We are so pleased, Doreen, that you could join us on Storylines. Welcome.
It's nice to be here, Christine.
Now, Doreen, Alan was a very special man and an extraordinary poet, and I've been lucky enough to read some of his poems. And in a moment, our listeners are going to be able to hear a couple of his poems. But before we do that, before we air that excerpt from a previous program, if you wouldn't mind, just tell us a little bit about Alan, for those who might not be familiar with Alan.
Well, no, and they might not be familiar with Alan here. But when we arrived in Canada in 1964, and we went to Montreal. We were heading for Toronto, actually. But we were advised to stop off and have a look, see if we could find anything in Montreal. And we did. We loved it. And it was there that he met a lot of other poets. He was writing poetry before, but not regularly. It was just for his own enjoyment. And then he met the poets of Montreal, such as Irving Layton, Al Purdy, John Glasgow.
So the greats of our time.
The greats, and Leonard Cohen.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, we knew him when he was writing poetry, and we didn't even think that he would ever be able to sing.
And so in that sort of company, is this how Alan developed his ear?
Irving Layton asked him to go to one of his classes. He sat in, and they brought out a little book called 13 Poems, and they were put together from the people who were in his class, and Alan's poetry was in there. And one of the poems, which is now in Exploring Amazement, is called A Spanish Dancer. I believe that was in there. Very good. And that got Alan started. He became a close friend of Irving Layton, and I became a close friend of Aviva. I wasn't too interested in poetry at that time, Christine. But I went along with Alan, and I listened. Al Purdy, he was fascinated by me because I was so quiet. And when he would come to our apartment, he would pick me up and twirl me around. And he was so tall and big and strong. And I loved that. It was so nice. So he made me feel at home.
And it sounds like they sort of just welcomed you in, both of you. And,
yes.
And so at what point did you leave Montreal?
We left Montreal. We were there for 18 years. We were talked into going to Greece. Leonard Cohen was already there. Irving Layton had been there and stayed for short periods. So he took a one-year sabbatical, and we went on a freighter that took us to Greece. We were on that for about 16 days. We had a wonderful time.
Wonderful.
That would be in 1969. And then a year later, we did it again.
Oh.
Now, not only, when we were in Greece, we found we ran out of money. So, of course, we went home to England and stayed with his mother. And I got a job as a shorthand typist.
And what was Alan working at the time?
At the time, he was a marine engineer.
Okay.
So he was doing marine drafting.
Yes, yes.
At that time.
So he could work, sort of pick up work?
Yes.
At any time?
He could do
that. So that was a very portable employment.
Right. So what we did, we had 3 months in Greece, we had 3 months in England, and then he went to see an agent who was always trying to get his books published.
Yes.
So he went down to London to meet an agent who happened to have a place in Spain.
Oh.
And she wasn't using it, so she said we could pay rent, of course.
Yes.
But that was it.
Wonderful.
So we had 3 months. 3 months in in Greece, 3 months in England, and 3 months in Spain. And then we came home. to Montreal. And we were there for 1 year, and we decided we'd do the whole thing again. So we did. We went, we did the whole thing again, 3 months in each of the places. But this time it was harder when Alan got back to get a job because of the situation.
Yes, yes, in Montreal.
Is that the place where he worked before, they were all already in the process of moving, and they couldn't take him back. So then we decided that we would come to Toronto.
And where there were more opportunities.
Chances. Yes.
Right, right. Yes. Okay, good. Well, that helps us to put it in context. And to think that that began amongst such company.
Yes.
Thank you for giving us a little of the background. And we're going to listen now to the excerpt. It kind of puts it in context. For me now, having heard that, you'll hear on the tape when James alludes to the interesting life that Alan led. He was a draftsman by day and a poet by night. Let's have a listen now to a rebroadcast of an excerpt of The Verge, hosted by James Carroll on June 6, 2012.
This is The Verge, a very special edition of The Verge. Today we're going to be celebrating the life and the works of an extraordinary man. And to help me along with this great journey this morning, the lovely Ms. Jenny Cressman. Hi, Jen.
Hi, James.
You know, I'm still a little overwhelmed.
Yes, yes. Alan Pearson was an amazing individual.
Yeah, he was. And I had an opportunity to meet with him, talk about his poetry. He was funny, irreverent, incredibly unassuming, and probably one of the greatest poets I've ever read.
Yes, yeah, he was a wonderful poet. I've only known him, I think, for the last 7 years-ish. I was sort of looking back as to when I met him. I'm not sure if it was before or after the article in Muskoka magazine that Mel Moulton wrote in 2005, which appeared in June, which happened to be the last issue that I was editor for Muskoka magazine. And we became friends after that, and he started coming to different writing groups. He read for some groups in Bracebridge, and then when I started a group called Word Swap here in Huntsville, then he was a regular guest.
Yeah, he certainly knew how to write.
Absolutely.
He had a heck of a life, too.
Oh, he did,
I mean,
yeah.
From the UK to Greece to Montreal to Toronto to Muskoka. We're very lucky to have him here.
Yes, we were for sure. Yeah, he came to Canada in, I believe it was 1954 with Doreen. I think he
that
was...
That young lady he married to?
Yeah, that sweet thing.
Mm-hmm.
his strongest ally and biggest fan for sure, too. And they landed in Montreal initially. And he did some work there at Montreal for the NFB as a screenwriter.
National Film Board, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. And then he went on, I'm not sure what year they moved to Toronto, but he landed there and spent most of his career there.
With the Globe.
Yeah, the Globe and Mail and also the Financial Post.
Huh.
Yeah, which doesn't seem to jive with poetry, but...
No, but I'm sure he's smiling.
Yes.
A financial wizard who can toss images that are otherworldly.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, and I wrote this down this morning. His such rich images in his poetry of obviously a soulful man, but with this childlike vision of the world of wonders.
Yes, yeah, and poetry, he talked in that article about how it's so important to have imagination and playfulness, but also to keep it accessible. He said, I won't waste time on poetry that is inaccessible to a well-read person of average intelligence.
Well, good, because that's me.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about the average part. Why don't we share some of his words?
Okay.
And what would you like to hear?
Well, let's get started with Muskoka, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all.
It's one of my favorites, and I think when you and I were reading his work at Northwards, I think it was one that I had read then, so it may be a little bit familiar to some listeners, although perhaps not those listening from the UK, where Alan's from. So, Muskoka. It was the lake's edge where spruce and tamarack sent over water the sweetness of resin breath. It was the lake's edge where outcroppings held fast in granite memory the soft press of Indian moccasins. It was morning when the lake signaled in golden disks in a semaphore read by frogs the buoyant mood of its shining surface. It was afternoon when our canoe's reflection was held in the eyes of deer sipping between the arch of cloven feet. It was an afternoon of frenzied flies, tracing upon air the semi-quavers of mindless music, humming above the saffron sunlight. It was an afternoon when an unseen cataract sent a thread of silver sound to beguile aspiring saplings and stir their aspen leaves to polkas. All day, coarse calls of blue jay tremored the wings of butterflies, dizzy from fragrance of petals, indigo and rose. It was predatory night when the moon's pale ribbon felt the lake's chill. A night of gripping talons, of sentinel owl patient for small creature rustle that would launch to motion the lethal strokes of soundless wings.
Wow. Talk about imagery. It's onomatopoeic.
Yes.
You know, I loved your humming. But the semaphore of frogs, mm-hmm. nature reflecting our mood.
Yeah.
So there's a personification of nature going one way.
Yeah.
But there's also our moods are determined by those that aural experience.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he has such rich textures in all his poems. There's always something about scent and visual and sound. It's all there.
And a fun rhythm.
Yeah, for sure.
Look, before we go to a commercial, I'd like to read this piece here. I never wanted to marry you, not at 18, the time of sweetest options. What a duvet of inviting bliss lay all around, so wide you could roll in any direction and be a fingertip from limbs sweet as Turkish delight, pink as any conceived by Ingres in some perfumed atelier deep in the heart of gay Paris. At 18, there would always be some foxy huntress available in wrinkle-free joggers, thighs gripping a sportive bay, or a severe headmistress with punishing lips and a blouse high-necked and black that masked, but not for me, a sensual heart, or to be carelessly confiding a schoolgirl, her gym slip riding high, sprawled and slyly smiling from a sofa corner. Buoyed by such effervescent dreams of adolescence, who would yearn to tie the knot? Not me. Tainted with a father with flying fists and a bent for pints of anger, so pronounced his wife would rather paper a room all night than go to the nuptial bed. So how can one explain after 50 years we are side by side, pushing through clouds to Spain, to Greece, to Arizona, evenings watching the box, reading novels, and in the car, kissing and bickering too. But now a feeling, a common dread. Married and like two plow horses, fearful which will be the first to halt a while, then in sharp alarm, fall in some field where one will be finally alone.
It leaves you speechless. There's a sense of time having stood still for a moment.
Yes.
To hear, of course, to hear James reading, but the words that Alan wrote, so powerful, so simple and so powerful.
And if you notice the ending, and a lot of the endings of this poetry, it's sort of, there's something there, mm-hmm. he's sensing death,
mm-hmm.
always. I've noticed it more since he died than I did before.
Oh, interesting. You didn't hear it at the time, but now,
no,
of course, you can hear it.
Now it's definitely, the Grim Reaper is somewhere hiding. You see, I'm not like that.
Mm. For our listeners who have not been familiar with Alan's work or have not heard it until today, I'd like to give them something to look forward to. And I understand that Alan wrote an autobiography that you are now working toward publishing?
That's right. And before he died, we talked about all his manuscripts. He's got so many manuscripts that haven't been published. And so I said, what do you want to do with all? What, do you want me to try and do something for you? He said, if you can, I would love that.
Oh.
But he said, they need editing. So he said, please, you do it. So there are big parts of his his manuscript that I edited. And it did come out as a digital book that came out in September for Amazon Kindle.
Just this past September?
Yes.
So if we look up...
The Apprentice.
The Apprentice.
Yes, because his book is, it's about his apprenticeship in marine engineering.
Okay.
But it's also about his apprenticeship in life, because it starts when he's 13. Okay. So it takes him up to when he's about 21. While I'm waiting for the hard copy to be approved,
yes,
I'm working on the changes for Amazon Kindle.
Oh, great.
There aren't too many, but I'm working on them to do that. Yes.
Good. We're just about to take a short break, but when we come back, Doreen, we may be able to convince you to read a poem of Ellen's for
us. I would love to.
Okay, so we're going to do that when we come back from break. You're listening to Storylines on Hunter's Bay Radio, 88.7 FM. Please stay with us as our tribute to Muskoka poet Alan Pearson continues. Welcome back to Storylines. I'm your host, Christine Cowley. Today we are paying tribute to Muskoka poet Alan Pearson, who died May 30th, 2012. We're very fortunate to be joined today by Alan's partner of many years, Doreen Pearson. Doreen, how long were you together?
I met him when I was 18.
Oh, lovely, lovely. And your face just lights up when you say that. It's yeah. It's such a beautiful thing to
you
see.
You know why it lights up?
Tell me.
Because my father had died in June. Yes. June 1948, my father died. He died of that. And I had taken it very badly. And then someone knocked on the door when we had friends visiting us, and someone knocked on the door to invite me to a New Year's Day party. So that would be first day of 1949. I said no. I said I can't come. I said my father died. I wouldn't feel comfortable going to a party. And besides, I have a friend with me. He said, bring her along. We're short of women. So I went back and I told my mum. I said no, I don't want to go. She said, you silly girl. We're going to go down to the pub tonight. So why don't you just go to the party? So I did. I took my friend. So that's where I met him. So, and he immediately, he helped me through my grieving. So I lost my father, but I gained a future husband.
And a partner in life.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I'm so glad you gave us that little story,
yeah,
Doreen.
Yeah.
So before the break, we told our listeners that you were going to read one of Alan's poems,
yes,
and you're going to give us that poem now.
Yes, I've chosen this, Christine, because it will be suitable for Alan, for Alan's family, and also for James's family.
Oh, beautiful.
Because he wrote this before we came up to Huntsville, so that would be sometime in the 1994 or five, something like that, when we used to come up on just to visit the weekend. And it's called I Will Be There, and it's written for my son Stephen. One day my telephone will echo in an empty room. Do not frown because I'm late to answer. I'm on my way to something that will not be denied. It will not please me thus to leave. I fear that where I go will not comply with any wish of mine. But if I have some choice upon the other side, I'll keep with you all kinds of rendezvous. On forest walks, when strands of wind sigh easy through the fragrant balsam, and you are left alone a moment, a twig may snap, or a bird provoked to flurry, then know that I am by your side. So if you still retain a taste for sunlit jetties, my eyes will be in the shine of an early morning lake, as the softly sputtering engine of your boat takes you with rod across the placid waters. Again in a restaurant that overlooks a highway, when knife and fork have stopped their clatter, as there comes a lull in the table's chatter, there will always be something familiar in the walk of a stranger seen from afar, and you will say, he had such a walk. Then perhaps some night, when sleep evades your wishes, and the room is quiet but for blood rush in your ears, I will be caught inside the tumult, turned over and over, like some half-submerged thing in a sea that rolls on a far-off shore. Know then that when you lift the ringing foam, it will not be my voice you hear to try you with my anger, bore you with an explanation, or hold you all impatient with my love.
That was a wonderful choice for today.
Yes, I thought it would be.
And, you know, yes, you mentioned, you can hear in those lines how he knew he was leaving before his time, before he was ready to leave.
Before he even got cancer.
Yes. Yes. He knew he was leaving.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. He but always felt he would, and he wanted to go before me. He didn't want to be left behind. Mm. He wanted to go first because he felt that I was the stronger of the two. Now, I didn't think that at the time.
Doreen, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you about Alan, to mark this anniversary of his passing, to listen to James reading his work, and to listen to your voice, and to Jenny Cressman, all of you, with the beautiful expression of Alan's words. So thank you very, very much for joining
us
today.
Christine. It was a pleasure for me to be here. Anytime.
Listeners, thank you for joining us today for this very special tribute to two men who will never be forgotten by Muskoka, the wonderful poet Alan Pearson and the much-loved, much-missed James Carroll. You've been listening to Storylines on Hunter's Bay Radio, 88.7 FM. I'm your host, Christine Cowley, and I'm here every Thursday morning at 10:05 a.m. to talk to authors and book folks about books and the writing life. Please join us next Thursday when we'll be speaking with one of our country's most delightful authors, the very entertaining Terry Follis.